Today's podcast is brought to you by the Herzog Foundation. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Well, our guest today, Dr. Terry Denai, says there's a lot that can be done to help women of all ages feel better. This will be an enlightening conversation about our bodies, how they work, and what women need in each decade of life. That's coming up next. This is the Moms for America podcast. Each week, leaders and everyday champions tell personal stories, share advice, and tackle the issues most important to moms. Hi, moms. I'm Debbie Corletis, your host, and this is the Moms for America podcast. Welcome, moms. I'm so glad that you're joining us again this week. All right. Every episode, we get together to inspire, encourage, and educate moms in their journey through motherhood. Well, on to today's program. We have Dr. Terry Denai. She is a board-certified nurse practitioner who also has a master's and doctoral degrees from the University of Texas. She is trained in acute and emergency medicine, preventative wellness medicine, functional medicine, and hormone replacement therapy. She is also the author of Hormone Havoc and the founder of Avexius Medical Centers. She's joining us today. All right. Well, welcome, Dr. Terry, to the Moms for America podcast. We're so glad to have you.
So happy to be here. Thank you so much. It's an honor.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to talk about all things for women's health, and we've got a really good conversation here. But before we get into that, would you tell us a little bit about your tribe, your kids? What does your team look like?
Yes, we have a big team, really big team.
Yeah.
We have seven adult children that range from 39 to 21. Three are married. The oldest two have children. There's one on the way. So we've got seven grandkids. So we have five girls and two boys, and it's a lot of fun. They all live in the Metroplex. So we're really blessed that they're all right here with us.
Oh, isn't that the best thing ever? Yeah. When your kids grow up, it's just such a different season.
It is.
It's not like they're little anymore. And it's almost like you get to a point where it's like, were they ever little? But now you got the next generation, huh?
And you know, you always hear how just grandkids are so fun. And they yeah. really are. They really are, because you get to play with them and send them back. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to spoil them.
Congratulations to you, Grandma and Mama. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we met a few weeks ago, and I was told by a friend, mutual friend, Stacey Shefflin, that mm-hmm. you've got to have Dr. Terry on. She talks about everything, all things for women, for their health, hormones, all this stuff. So I said, well, let's figure out how we can get this mama on, because, boy, we are all searching for better options for our health.
Absolutely.
Hormones, how to take care of it. I mean, it's gotten pretty complicated because our food's become so bad.
Absolutely.
We've got all kinds of outlying resources that are coming into our body that harm us, and we may not know that. So we're going to talk about that.
That's right.
But here in the beginning, let's talk a little bit about, it's flu season right now.
Yes.
I know you've kind of dealt with some.
I got a scratchy voice on the tail end of some laryngitis, but I was able to get over it pretty well with all my little bag of tricks, you know.
Yes, and we had it come through our house a couple of weeks ago with my son too. So, what do we do when we just now in the flu season? What are some of your tips? Your talk of the healthy trades, and then just basically, you know, flu vaccines are being pushed on everywhere you go. Get your flu vaccine.
I'd like to get your take on that.
Yeah, let's start out with that one, huh? What do you think about flu season, how to fight it, and actually the flu vaccine as well?
Yeah, so, you know, years ago when I was in college and I was working on my doctorate program, we weren't even in the hospital setting. We weren't even on campus. It was mostly remote. And the university was requiring flu vaccines. And, you know, I bucked up against it and fought against that. And I said, well, you know, what's the point? What's the exposure? You know, who's in danger here? And they really fought me on it. And it sent me down this path of really researching. And I ended up winning because the data just doesn't support in healthy individuals that the flu vaccine does any good. In fact, most people that get it actually get sick. There's a little bit of medical data that shows there's could be some efficacy in our more vulnerable populations like the elderly or immune compromised. But by and large, prevention is key. And just, when you're exposed, when you're traveling, you got to load up with vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, fluids. And I'm a big fan of ivermectin. It has been proven time and time again to be efficacious for viral infections. And so, these days, we don't know, do we have the flu? Do we have another strain of COVID? Do we have, a virus is a virus is a virus. And so they all they all respond in the same way. You give your body what it needs to fight it. And, for instance, this thing that you hear my voice scraggling along, my coworkers that were sick with it were literally down for 10 days with a fever, couldn't get out of bed, and all I got was a little bit of drainage and no fever, no downtime, and I lost my voice a little bit. I've been speaking at conferences the last 2 weekends, so that probably didn't help my voice. But it's pretty, as soon as I knew I had coworkers that were exposed, I started popping all the supplements and my ivermectin, and it's really good to have on hand. So I'm just back to the story about my school is what I found. I found a big study. It was called a systematic review that actually showed in healthy adults and children, the flu vaccine had zero efficacy. It did not prevent any flu from being contracted at all. So I hung my hat on that and they gave me a pass.
Well, good. I don't know if this is the case with you, but my husband got the flu vaccine one time and he got so sick. And then I had a coworker many, some moons ago here, and every time he got it, he always within the week was just down deathly ill. And he's like, "Oh no, this is helping me." I'm like, "Okay."
Well, I'm an emergency room clinician by experience, and for many years I worked in the emergency room, and I never got any of the vaccines, and they weren't really pushing them in the hospitals back then. It was just been since COVID they really started pushing them. But I diagnosed in the ER that season. If you remember bird flu, remember bird flu and swine flu too. I diagnosed over 250 cases that season. Didn't do anything but preload with vitamin D, vitamin C, and I never got sick. Good hand washing, that's key. So prevention is key.
Yeah, it sure is. All right. Well, let's kind of talk about now we've got the flu season covered. CD, zinc, ivermectin. All right. Let's talk about the gut and gut health. Boy, you can't really kind of scroll through Instagram or look at anything regarding health without talking about the gut, because that is where it all starts, at where it begins. Probiotics, prebiotics, all that stuff. Can we talk a little bit about healthy gut and just what are some of your suggestions on getting us in a better place?
Oh boy, it's one of my favorite topics right now. It's a chapter in my book. I just spoke on it at a big conference this weekend for 2,000 doctors, and it is the root of pretty much Hippocrates said it. I didn't even come up with this. All disease begins in the gut, and that is true. I mean, over 2,000 years ago, it's a quote. So paying attention, and finally, I think mainstream is paying attention. But the problem is for most clinicians, and this has to do with the gut, with hormones, it doesn't matter. We're not really trained on this stuff in our primary core, education and training. You have to really go outside of those systems to learn about nutrition and the gut and et cetera. So I'm really passionate about teaching about it. But it is true, we have a epidemic of disease. It all is rooted in our food and our stress and our lifestyle, and all of those things impact the gut. And what a lot of people, especially moms, don't really put two and two together because their clinicians aren't sharing, maybe their pediatricians aren't really sharing, is that these kids, a lot of these kids that have, quote, ADD, a lot of teenagers with anxiety and depression, there's a gut-brain axis that when you have there's a big fancy word, it's called a dysbiotic gut, and I'll talk about what that means in a minute. It impacts mood and thinking and mental clarity and focus. And so I can't tell you how many young in their 20s patients that I have gotten off of some of these antidepressants and ADD meds that was just band-aiding symptoms. It wasn't even the root cause. So these types of symptoms aren't normal. And so I think one of the biggest things I'm passionate about is just bringing awareness of shifting away from this, what we call in our country an allopathic mindset. And what that is the way we do medicine in this country is you have a symptom, you get a prescription to treat that symptom. But really, clinicians anymore are not trained to look for root cause of disease. We are disease managers, we are illness managers. And so the first thing really that needs to be looked at, and I impressed upon this group of doctors this past Saturday, is that no matter your specialty practice, whether you're cardiology, pulmonology, psychology, neurology, it doesn't
Whatever.
matter. You have to look at the gut because that is the middle of the wheel where everything stems from. And the reason that is because when we have too much bad bacteria overgrowth in our guts, it releases these proteins, and one of them is called lipopolysaccharides, and they are highly inflammatory. They inflame the brain, they inflame the whole system, they increase your risk for insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes. We're seeing that hormone changes are beginning in the gut. Young ladies with PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, endometriosis. Now, 2025 studies are finally saying, hey, it's actually coming from the gut, everybody. Let's peel this onion back and work on that. And it's
Like
simple.
a candida too,
Yeah,
any of
for
that, right?
sure. Absolutely. It's simple, but it's not easy because, when you start telling people, well, you got to quit eating this, 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 and this, and you got to change, it's a little daunting. If somebody told me you can't have coffee anymore, I'd be like, so.
Yeah, I'm curious what your diet's like, but don't tell me that now. But
Okay.
I am curious because so much is inflammatory,
Yes.
so much is not good for us.
Yeah.
I'd love to know just your thoughts about organic, and maybe we should just talk about what your diet is, because this is the problem. Where do we go? What do we? How do you even
Yeah.
know what's good anymore? Because some will say, yogurt's great. No, yogurt's dairy. That's inflammatory, or berries are this, and no, they're not this. And you kind of legumes are good. No, they're not. You kind of start going through this whole thing of like,
Right.
what is good and what isn't.
I think you can't. We're all different. We're all made up different. We all have different
Good
genetics.
point,
And so, what might work for one person doesn't work for the next person. But by and large, an anti-inflammatory diet is typically more like a Mediterranean style diet. Fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, fresh meat. Not as much red meat as we probably eat in Texas. We probably eat too much red meat, according to that diet. But and when possible, of course, if you can get organic grass-fed, of course, that's great. But I will tell you right now, I would much rather a person get non-organic produce, fresh fruits, vegetables, fresh produce, fresh meat, than get something out of a package. If you can just stop one thing, and
That's a
that's
good point.
opening a package. I tell patients all the time, if you can't pick it, pull it, or kill it, you shouldn't eat it, right? And I had a guy one time, he's like, well, does it count if I pull those potato chips off the shelf? Like, no, that's not the pull I'm talking about. I'm talking about, fruit from a tree. But you have to meet people where they're at, right? I mean, I had a patient one time that she suffered from severe migraines. When I sat down and went through her daily, diet intake, she was drinking six big gulp Dr. Peppers a day. She was addicted to Dr. Pepper. And, if I would have said, you got to quit drinking all those Dr. Peppers, she would have said, no, it's too hard. So you got to meet people where that, how about let's take that six down to four? And then maybe in 2 weeks we can take it down to two. So you have to give yourself grace. But let me tell you, there's a lot of mixed messages on media, of course,
Sure
social
is.
media. It's like, this is good, this is bad. You said it, yogurt's good, yogurt's bad. I think where yogurt's getting a bad rap is most yogurts, especially commercially, are a ton of sugar. And that's really what I think of all the moms out there. If there's one thing you could pay attention to when you're shopping for food for your family, because we're the primary ones that do that,
Sure are.
just look for those added sugars on the label. And then, of course, the food dyes, which I know the MAHA movement and Senator Kennedy is really trying to really has made a lot of headway getting those unnecessary dyes out of our foods. But
Well, that's it. When, is dairy okay? How much dairy?
yeah.
Like you said, caffeine, is caffeine okay? And I think what your a little bit of your point is what do you suggest? Do you kind of go gradual and start evaluating, or do you try to go a little bit harder and then reintroduce? That's another way that you can look at food and your diet. I was just curious What would you suggest for
You
us?
know, we're pretty intuitive people. I think all of us know what foods make us not feel well. Food
Yeah.
is supposed to energize you and give you, energy and clarity.
Good point,
So if
yeah.
you feel sluggish and yucky and bloated and all these things after you eat something, it's information. Your body's giving you information to pay attention to. We have a lot of allergies in kids now, and we're seeing this gut issue starting to happen in the womb in pregnant moms. So how can we alter that environment so the babies are born with healthier guts? There's a whole lot to the conversation, but
Yeah, there is.
I think just being intuitive, we know what works, what doesn't work for our bodies. And if you want to just start with something simple, just as much as you can shift away, it's hard, again, because we're very busy people, but as much as you can shift away from eating out fast food, just take those little steps. Now, for me in my clinics, again, we meet people where they're at. I have some people that come in, they're so miserable. They've been sick for so long. They're so inflamed. They feel terrible. Maybe they're dealing with weight issues or hormone issues, and they're ready. They're gung-ho. They're like, whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do it. Of course, that's my favorite patient, right? But that's not realistic for a lot of people. And the biggest thing I want to say that I've seen over and over is people start with these great goals, especially at the beginning of the new year, and there's, they start. When they fail or they stop or they don't do it, then there's a lot of shame and it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, it is. What about, and I'm going off another beaten path here. What about fasting?
Oh, somebody asked me about that today. So intermittent fasting is another one of those things that I think there's a lot of fads, there's a lot of biohacks. Is intermittent fasting is this good? Is cold plunging good? Is, all of these things. And intermittent fasting definitely has some great benefits. There's a lot of studies that show, our bodies were not designed to be constantly breaking down and metabolizing food. It's just not how God designed us. So there does need to be big chunks of time between meals. And this is what's causing a lot of our gut issues because our gut just can't get a break and it, it to repair and recover, right? So
Heal,
this
yeah.
concept of eating every 2 hours or snacking because it increases my metabolism, well, it doesn't work that way. So intermittent fasting is good. The trick with intermittent fasting is to change it up. You got to constantly be tricking your body because if you start doing these 12 to 14 to 16 hour fasts, like say you're not going to eat after 6 p.m. and then you don't eat till lunch the next day, whatever that is, your body will reset its metabolic clock, for lack of better explanation,
Yeah,
and
I've
then
heard
you
this. I've heard this,
yes.
right.
So you kind of gotta you gotta intersperse it with just normal feed times, right? So maybe you every other day or every third day you do a longer fast, and so it's there. I think the guru, the person, the doctor that I've learned the most about intermittent fasting, his name is Dr. Jason Fung, and he's brilliant. He is a nephrologist who got tired of taking kidneys out of diabetics, and he's like, what is going on here? This is a preventable disease. All these patients are on transplant lists, they're on dialysis, and he started really researching, and he's written a couple of books, The Diabetes Code, The Obesity Code, The Cancer Code, and he really breaks down intermittent fasting, and it really probably in the best way that I've ever read.
Yeah, I just got done with that Fast Like a Girl, and that was really interesting. And it talks about even just different periods of your life, if
Absolutely.
you're right, menopause, postmenopause, just your cycles, your age, all that
All of
matters,
it matters. Yep.
whether and then the other thing that we talk a lot about is sleep.
Ugh,
I think that is
I have
another
so much to
huge
say about
issue.
that.
What,
So
I
much
mean,
to
so many
say.
people I know, including Pam, my producer here, sleep is just tough. It's hard to get on a good regimen. And what do? Do you take melatonin? Or is it that you're doing something wrong? Or what are you supposed to do? And is it hormone related? All right. And we don't even know where to go with this, but sleep is very, very important for our moms.
Let's talk about that.
And
So
rest.
it depends. So there's a couple of different root causes for sleep that I'm always addressing. Now, when we're talking about hormones, Women make a very important hormone that starts to slow down in our 30s, and that's testosterone. It is a powerful, relaxing, calming. It's beautiful for sleep. One of the first things that men and women say when they come and get their hormones optimized, and we include testosterone in that, is the sleep is number one. And then in our 40s, women lose progesterone, and progesterone is another hormone that is very beneficial for sleep. And then, of course, by the time we're in our 50s, we've lost estrogen. So
I
those
mean,
are.
what's a girl to do? What's
I
a girl to
know.
do by the time
Well,
we start losing all of
I
this?
know. And so, you know what? A lot of women are suffering from, sleep deprivation, depression, moodiness, irritability. They can't sleep. They can't focus. They have joint pain. They're gaining weight. And this is usually starts kicking in after that second baby. So moms out there that have, beat yourself up because you can't get back in shape after that second baby, it's actually a hormone issue. And so it is easy to fix. You just got to find somebody that understands how
And
to
what
do that.
happens with the second baby? Why is it the second baby?
Listen, it's nature's way of getting you to quit having babies for a hot minute and take care of the ones you already had, but in all seriousness, really, after that second baby, our testosterone production does go down quite a bit because nature really wants us to focus on rearing those children. So when our testosterone low is low, our libido is low, right? So we're not as apt to be more anxious to procreate. So that's kind of the science behind it. But there's an impact to that. There's an impact to that with energy and moods and sleep. So hormones is one aspect of the sleep conversation. But let's take it back to the kids that aren't getting sleep right now, the teenagers that aren't getting sleep. And you already said it, it's melatonin. And it's not that we're so much melatonin deficient, we're overlight stimulated. We do not honor darkness at all in the
Ooh.
world. And
What does that
so,
mean? Honor darkness. All right, come on.
yeah, that's good. So we have a real problem with light pollution in this world. One of the biggest things that people could do right away is just don't have a TV in your bedroom. There's a great study that just came out that showed even 20 minutes of scrolling on your phone before bed will disrupt your circadian rhythm and decrease melatonin, and you won't sleep well. So really, you need to get away from all electronics, computers, TVs, phone screens, for at least an hour before bed. You've got to have some sort of ritual that tells your body it's time to go to sleep. So that's dimming the lights, getting rid of the phones, getting rid of the screen time, and set your body up for it's called sleep hygiene. The other thing that we don't do, a lot of is when I say honor darkness, in this time of year, especially, it gets dark at 5 o'clock. So it's, kind of hard. But, we go in and we're flipping on every light in the house, and it really causes a lot of confusion in our circadian rhythms. And obviously, you need to see, you've got stuff going on. But I think the biggest one that we see that is decreasing melatonin is the light pollution. And there's so many clinical studies that talk about that. And even with children and having bright night lights, you got to balance this, obviously, but there's some really nice, sleep-friendly night lights that are great for children's rooms that won't disrupt those melatonin cycles. I always get asked by parents, is it okay that I give my kid melatonin for sleep? You really probably shouldn't unless they're sick. Now, we are giving a lot more melatonin in ICUs and kids that are hospitalized because
Why is that?
because melatonin is a powerful anti-inflammatory. It's a powerful,
Oh.
what we call immunomodulator. It helps boost your immune system. People with low melatonin are higher risk for cardiovascular disease and cancers. Night shift workers that are exposed to light all the time are very high risk for cancers because of low melatonin production. So people that are working night shift or don't sleep well at night probably should supplement with melatonin. But by and large, children, if you put them to bed, get them away from screens at least an hour before bed and make their room as dark as they'll let you make it without bright closet lights shining in their eyes, they'll do fine. And this is a big problem when kids are getting sick. You talked about cold and flu season, RSV, there's all this stuff going around. And in those cases, melatonin is actually very beneficial when you have a viral illness. I didn't really mention it when we talked about how do you fight the flu, but melatonin is a big one. And when COVID happened in 2020, there was a lot of studies that were coming out that showed melatonin to really help mitigate and decrease that viral load burden and I could get into the science of it, but just suffice it to say that it's melatonin is a powerful, and that's why when you go to sleep at night, when it's dark, it tells your brain it's time to release melatonin, and melatonin is releasing all through the night, and it's repairing your body. So that rest and repair time, melatonin is a big part of that conversation. And what we now know is the melatonin that's secreted at night actually is working for the following next full 24 hours. So sleep hygiene, light pollution,
Yeah.
these fancy terms, but that's really what it's all about.
All right, moms, after this short break, we'll talk about hormones and how they are important to women's health at every decade of life. Stay with us. Hi, moms. I'm excited to share some news about our new sponsor, the Herzog Foundation. We know you're passionate about raising patriots and empowering your children with the best education possible. And the Herzog Foundation shares that passion. They're dedicated to promoting liberty through education freedom and helping parents like you choose the best educational path. They offer a powerhouse of resources designed to support families and schools alike. Whether you're ready to dive in headfirst to the world of education or simply looking for more ways to empower your child's learning, from free training events to their must-read online publication, The Lion, they're committed to keeping you informed about what's happening in education. Also, if you've ever thought, moms, about starting your own Christian school or co-op, their School Box online course will give you everything you need to get started on the right foot. Again, we are so proud to partner with the Herzog Foundation, and we encourage you to explore all their amazing tools and the insights that they offer. So go ahead, visit herzogfoundation.com to learn more. You won't want to miss these incredible resources. Again, find it all out at herzogfoundation.com. Hi, moms. Welcome back. Before we continue with our interview with Dr. Terry, I do want to remind everyone to please like, subscribe, and share this podcast. This is how we get our information out into our circles of friends. So please go ahead and share this. Also, if you have an idea or a topic for our podcast, would you please email me at podcast@momsforamerica.net? I would love those suggestions. And of course, I would love to hear from you. And lastly, I want to invite all of our moms that are listening to join the movement here at Moms for America. We would love to have you in our movement here with mamas all across this country. We're uniting together. We're fighting for faith, family, freedom, and the Constitution. How do you find out about Moms for America? You go to momsforamerica.us. Check us out all there. We have a plethora of information from podcasts to webinars to seminars to booklets to pamphlets, everything to help you moms in your journey through motherhood. So please check us out. Join the movement there. Join the newsletter too, the whole thing at momsforamerica.us. All right, we're going back to the show right now. Here we go. All right, what about hormone replacement therapy? I'd love to discuss this with you. The FDA decided to remove the black box warning, and we've
Yes.
done quite a few shows on hormone replacement therapy because I think women want to know, is it
Yes.
safe? Isn't it safe? What did the data say? Was the data inaccurate? And where are we at with all this now that the warning's off and there's kind of been a great reveal or much more transparency?
Right. You know, this is my sweet spot. This is what I do, is hormones for 16 years in men and women across the age span. And I actually was invited to HHS and had no idea that that announcement was being made that day by Marty McCary. And I couldn't have, I almost screamed out loud and cheered, but then it was, I guess it wasn't, you know, that wasn't proper etiquette there. But I couldn't believe that they lifted that. I have been teaching the literature for 16 years. Since 2020, we have known that estrogen not only doesn't cause breast cancer, but is preventative for breast cancer and preventative for death from breast cancer. So, do you want me to tell you how we got in
Wow.
this position in the first
Yeah,
place?
let's do a little
Okay.
bit of history of this because it
Yeah.
really is a hot topic.
It is. So what happened in 2000 and in the late 90s, we began to, we, the research community, started a trial called the Women's Health Initiative Trial. I think everybody knows now about the WHI. And the WHI had two arms in it. It had a synthetic estrogen arm, Premarin, which is pregnant mare urine. Premarin is the synthetic estrogen. And then it had another arm of the trial for women that were on Premarin and a synthetic progestin called PremPro. Well, the PremPro arm of the trial in about 2002, a couple of years in the trial, we were seeing increased rates of Alzheimer's disease, breast cancers, strokes, cardiovascular disease, everything opposite of what we thought estrogen was supposed to protect us from. So the reason the trial was started is because physicians were seeing for decades that women that were on estrogen replacement therapy had lower rates of cardiovascular disease and other diseases. And so they wanted to prove that it was the postmenopausal estrogen that was helping these women. But what happened is we had the estrogen-only arm of the trial, the estrogen-progestin arm of the trial. All the bad stuff was happening in the progestin arm. So all of the bad data was extrapolated and put out through the media that all hormones are bad. So rather than dialing in on the actual drug which caused the problem, which are progestins, everyone needs to understand that is different than progesterone. Rather than
Progestin.
honing in on that drug, we threw all the baby out with the bathwater. And what they did is they took the negative results of that arm of the trial and applied it to all hormones and all hormone modalities, whether it's bioidentical, synthetic, et cetera. So we've been studying and looking at the data from the WHI for the last 20 years. And in
And
tw
that was like the Bible
Oh,
of that was
yeah.
like
Oh, it was
that was
it.
the standard, I should
Globally.
say.
You know, when those results were splattered across the media, Time Magazine, everything in 2004, women were throwing away their hormones. Doctors quit prescribing. It was a mess. And, you know, within months, women were either suicidal or homicidal. And I say that kind of joking, but not really. Women were just super miserable, and begging for their hormones back, and they couldn't get them. And that was devastating for so many patients. Now, what we know 20 years later is there were over What this is just what's been recorded, over 250,000 that we know of excess deaths because of hormone avoidance in women over the past 20
That's a
years.
lot.
It's a lot. So a heck of a lot more women died from avoiding hormones than taking hormones. And that's really the bottom line. 2020, the same authors of the WHI came out. They had a paper in 13, 17, and 20. And in 2020, they stated the one and only drug that has ever been shown in a large, randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blinded trial, which is the best of the best, to prevent breast cancer and breast cancer mortality or death from breast cancer is estrogen. And that's it. And so finally, Marty Makary, when he made that announcement, he took all of that data that he knew existed and basically announced it and reversed that black box warning. So that's step one. And now step two is to getting through all the noise in the media because, you know, a lot of the media is out there saying, oh, he jumped the gun on that. He shouldn't have done that. And, you know, he's getting a lot of flack for it. But no, he's exactly right. I've been teaching this for many, many years. And I was just so proud that finally we're making decisions and recommendations to doctors and patients that are based in science and not, you know, whatever other agenda might be there.
How do you know, like, is our hormone replacements for everyone? Do you evaluate per person? Is it something that everyone should be on? Are there a certain women that should not? Like, I'm just for myself, my doctor's kind of like, well, you're doing okay. Maybe you don't need to worry about it, you
I
know?
love this
Yeah.
question.
So it's kind of like, where do you go with this? Now, I know I've got friends that, you know, were really not in a, just mentally not in a good spot. Could not sleep, were very irritated, almost like a little bit of anxious, pretty bad anxiousness, actually. And it was hormone. So, when do you know to check it out? Or is it something that you suggest for everyone? Where do we go with this? So, now it's okay and it's safe, but what does it really mean for us as individuals? Is it something that we should pursue right away?
Well, let's break this down into the different age spans, right? Because there's hormones that we lose different hormones at different decades in our life. So in our 30s, we start to lose testosterone. And that's biologic, right? I already said it. You know, we're designed to have babies younger and, you know, we're having babies older. But in our 30s, we lose testosterone. It is a powerful brain hormone. My doctoral dissertation was on testosterone and depression because I was noticing over and over in my clinical practice, women that I optimized their testosterone levels, they were able to come off their antidepressants, which was powerful because those drugs have major side effects, weight gain, just a lot of side effects. And so I started paying really close attention to this. So in our 30s, we lose testosterone typically at a pretty high degree. And then in our 40s, we lose progesterone. So now, by the time we're in our 40s, we have low testosterone and low progesterone. Progesterone is a calming hormone and it balances estrogen. And so, a lot of women that are suffering from anxiety and things like that, they just have a tend to have a progesterone deficiency or maybe a combination of testosterone and progesterone. And then you fast forward a little bit more into our late 40s, early 50s, when we're in perimenopause, which can last 2 to 8 years. It's a long suffrage for many of us. I'm 58. Yeah, it's a journey. It's a journey. And that's when our estrogen levels are fluctuating wildly. So already in our late 40s and our early 50s, we've lost testosterone, we've lost progesterone, and now we're losing estrogen. And unfortunately, remember I said the allopathic model? A lot of clinicians will say, well, let's just give you some estrogen to get you through this time of hot flashes. And then when those symptoms are gone, you don't need to be on it anymore. That could not be further from the truth. Because what we know about women that are going through perimenopause, if they do not get estrogen replaced within 3 years, and we've seen this on a study, it came out in 2024. Within 3 years, they already have what we call beta amyloid deposition, which is the hallmark of Alzheimer's disease in the brain. And that's a decade before symptoms start. So the point of these researchers was, listen, women need to get on, replace their estrogen as early as possible and stay on it as long as possible. There is the only woman that is not a candidate technically from a disease burden aspect for estrogen replacement therapy is if she has an active breast cancer that is estrogen receptor positive. And I can talk about the breast cancer conversation here. You know, we can expand on that if you want to. But by and large, what we now know is because estradiol is so preventative to cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's disease, osteoporosis, skin, moods, thinking, mental clarity, relationships, there is just no contraindication except in active breast cancer for women to now. And that's just estrogen. If you have a woman that has an active breast cancer or is a breast cancer survivor and is within her 5-year treatment window, testosterone is a powerful hormone and she absolutely can and should take it. There is a great breast cancer surgeon in the Northeast. Her name is Rebecca Glaser and Glaser. And she has great studies on her website she does testosterone therapy in women, breast cancer survivors. She doesn't use estrogen in them. She just uses testosterone. And the quality of life is unbelievable for these women because what happens is, it's so sad. Once a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer, it's almost like a death sentence. Like you can never get, even if you've survived, you know, those of us that survive it are told you can never do hormones. And that is just so far from the truth. It is an individualized approach. For instance, I have patients that have been diagnosed stage one breast cancer, lumpectomy, no lymph node, no spread, no nothing. Didn't even go on any kind of the drugs like tamoxifen or Arimidex or some of these medications, these estrogen blockers. And they were told you can't have hormones. And you know, I have conversations with oncologists and say, well, why? Why? So why? She has no disease, or she's had a double mastectomy. There was no spread. So now you're going to put her at risk for Alzheimer's disease, cardiovascular disease, and osteoporosis to avoid what? What are you afraid of? So it has to be an individual approach. It has to be an individual conversation. And I want to give any women out there that are listening that may have a loved one or they themselves have suffered from breast cancer and told they can't have hormones, that there is hope for you. And there's another really great book. It's called Estrogen Matters. And this was an oncologist whose wife got breast cancer and they did the usual care with her. And he just watched his sweet wife just slowly wither away into somebody he didn't recognize. And he's an oncologist, and he said, "We're doing something wrong here." And so he started researching it, and he wrote a book about it, and he's really a
Estrogen,
proponent.
what was it again?
Estrogen matters.
Wow. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, when you start talking about this to women, it's like I'm just thinking, okay, so first 5 years, what if your past 5 years?
And if you're past 5 years and you're no longer seeing oncology and you're not on any of those medications, there's
No, I
abs
mean,
yeah.
now not breast cancer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Oh,
sorry,
no, I
because now
understand
I'm
what you're asking.
yeah.
Yeah, so are you asking, I think you're asking
So now you're 5 years
is it okay to start
menopause.
hormones? Yeah,
Yeah. Or is it too
absolutely.
late? Did you miss
Nope.
that window?
You didn't miss the window. So the 10-year window of opportunity was the synthetic progestins. And that recommendation went away by the North American Menopause Society in 2017. So it is no longer the lowest dose for shortest amount of time. If you remember that recommendation for many
Okay.
years, it
Yeah.
was okay, women, if you're going to be on hormones, just take the lowest dose for the shortest amount of time. And when your symptoms stop, you need to stop them. That has gone out because now we know the data is very clear. The longer a woman stays on her hormones, no matter when she starts it, no matter the age, she has a protective benefit to the brain, the bones, the breast, everything.
So you can, so when, once you go on hormone replacement therapy, is that forever? Is that the goal, to stay on it? Just adjust it accordingly? Like, that's kind of like you're taking your vitamin every day. Like,
Yep.
this is your deal.
Yeah,
You don't go off of
I
it. It's
will
not
never go
temporary.
off as long as I will, for as long as I live. Because there, once you go off, all those receptors in your brain. So when there's a receptor on a cell in your body, it means there's a molecule that has a job to do in that cell. And there are receptors for hormones in every single body system, head to toe. This isn't just a reproductive conversation. This isn't just about libido. It's about whole body health. And so if you stop those hormones, just like the oncologist's wife, you just start withering, and the word hormone actually means to impel, to urge, to move on, to cause an action, to get up, to go, right? So it kind of makes sense. It makes everything work. Can I tell a story about a guy? I know we're talking about women. So
We have men that listen to the show too.
yeah,
I
well,
don't
and
know if they're listening today,
there's
but
husbands too, to the
right,
moms that
but
are listening to the shows.
the wives will let the husbands in on it.
I
Yes.
have so many stories, obviously of just relationships and all of that, but I will tell you how powerful testosterone is for men. I had a patient that her father, he was 90 something, and he used to get up, take a walk every day, do his crossword puzzle, very active. And then she just noticed him when she would go visit him over that prior 6 months, that he just was didn't want to get up out of the chair. He just was not himself. And she had listened to me speak on testosterone, and she had become a patient. She said, "Could we check my dad's testosterone?" I was like, "Sure." And his testosterone was a 9. Okay, men need to be at least 500, if not higher. An optimal range for men is about 1,000. And so I encouraged her. He didn't live in my state, so I encouraged her to work with his primary care provider to see if they would put him on some testosterone replacement therapy. And she reached out to me 2 weeks later, and she said it was like watching a corpse come to life. I mean, I could not believe he just literally, one day he was just up and his normal self, and she couldn't believe it. And that's why. When you ask the question of how long should I be on them, I mean, this was a healthy 90-year-old guy who lived alone and took care of himself and was fully functional and active. And just that one little thing, they were ready to put him in a nursing home and for him just to die. He has many years left. He's still alive to this day. He's over 100, right?
Look at
So
that.
it really is impactful. It really is impactful. And when you can get that great grandfather at Christmas around telling stories to the great grandkids and the great great grandkids, I mean, that's what it's all about, right? It's about community.
Right. And our quality of life too. One other question that comes in my mind, and I'm thinking it's some of the moms that are listening. And I know part of the answer is because our society, our culture, the food, everything is taking screwing up our hormones,
Yes,
right?
absolutely.
So God intended us to, stop the cycle and menopause. I mean, that's intentional. We do get
Correct.
old, our skin changes, our bones get, we just get old,
Right.
and it's the way it's supposed to be, I guess, the season of winter, when you're older. But I guess I'm just trying to think, some people are like, hey, you're messing with the way that God's intended it to be. You just get older. That's how it is. And these things change. But I think a lot of the problem is that our food and our atmosphere is depleting us of our hormones even more than maybe it would actually have been if we were all in a
100%.
healthier situation, from food to the climate and everything
Right.
around us. Is that right, doctor?
That's 100%. So there's two great points you just made. Number one, let's talk about the first one a bit. Aren't we just supposed to gracefully grow old naturally? Well, I think, there was a time when our life expectancy was around 60s, but now our life expectancy is in our 80s. And if that was, so if that's the case, if we're trans men and women go through these major hormone changes by the time we're in our 50s, we're saying on the last third of our life, we're just supposed to be miserable and sit around and wither and have disease. And, because there's a direct correlation to not replacing hormones in men and women and disease burden, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's disease, other forms of dementia. And so, but rather than looking at that possibly being a root cause in prevention, we're 100% apt to go get on drugs for all those things, right? That are band-aiding those
It's true.
symptoms, right?
It's true.
So I'm more about let's age naturally and gracefully. And God also created very brilliant minds that have figured out bioidentical hormones and how to replace hormones in as close as possible. We'll never get it exactly like God did, but as close as possible to help us fully function and be engaged in life with our families. So there's that whole growing old gracefully is fine, and that's an individual choice. I think if you're educated and that's what you choose, awesome, because the mind is powerful. I mean, I have seen, women come into my office with a certain set of blood work labs on their hormones that are miserable, can't get out of bed, don't want to engage in life, and another woman with that same numbers that is joyful and jovial and vibrant. So a lot of that is a mindset, right? And so it's a very individualized approach. So that's that part of what you said. The other part with the food is absolutely, we are seeing fertility issues in younger and younger people. Polycystic ovary disease is the biggest fertility issue we see in young women, starting in teenagers. It is all gut driven. Endometriosis, we're seeing young women get endometriosis where they have these lesions that scar up their fallopian tubes and their uterus. They can't have children. There's a lot of pain. And that all now we know starts with the gut. What does that mean? It starts with the food. So we have to pay attention to this food conversation. And I'm just so proud and excited that we have right now an administration that's really paying attention to that for the
I
health of our
know.
kids, our future.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just so glad for Secretary Kennedy that is really trying to investigate everything from hormones
Absolutely.
to healthy food. We've got Secretary Rollins with agriculture,
Yes.
just really trying to look. We have chronic disease, right? Like Secretary Kennedy says, we have a society of chronic disease. I mean, this is out of control, from autism to cancers. I mean, why aren't we looking at our food sources? But even just like your lotions, just everything can
Everything.
really mess with your hormones, especially lotions. Like, we have a Yucca app that my daughter and I use, just to at least get a screening on what you're
Putting
using
on your
and is
body,
it
yeah.
safe?
Yeah. Yeah, I was listening to a functional dietitian speak one time, and she said something, women leave the house with on average 80 different chemicals that they've put on their body. It's whether it's shampoo, hair products, makeup, lotions, nail polish, you name it. So our bodies are working really hard to detox all these
They sure
chemicals,
are.
all the time. So we got to give it
Ooh.
what it needs. And then, of course, you can't say enough about the food. And then the other piece that a lot of people are kind of talking about a little bit, but it's not. It's what we're putting in our minds. So yes, in our bodies and our guts, but there's a
Yeah,
brain
that's a good
gut
point.
connection, and the stress of constant information at you via technology, social media,
Yeah.
whatever, is putting a burden on our gut also. There is a direct correlation to what's coming in here and how it impacts the gut. And then what we put in here impacts the mind. So it all works together. And so we have to really pay attention to this whole concept about screen time and just giving our brains a break. We're not designed, our brains aren't designed to keep doing this all the time. I mean, I'm sure I'm older than you, but I remember when I got my first cell phone, and it was, it was 30
I
years ago.
know.
Before that, it's like, what did we do?
I
We
know.
were a lot
My
less
son's
stressed.
watching a show and he's like, "Oh man, the 80s were just so cool. Like people rode bikes and went to movies and played out, and it's just like no phones, no technology, no, it was just so different and it just felt different." And it's, this generation, and you've got grandkids coming up, and my guys are 27, 25, 21. I mean, it's like it's a different world for them.
It
And you
is.
kind of wish that you could go back and just a little bit of a simpler time, because all this in the battles that we have to do as parents and the sexualization of your kids and all this just comes
So much
in.
exposure, and their
So
brains aren't
it's
developed
tough.
enough to handle all that stress. And that's why suicide rates are so high in teenagers. It's one of the biggest reasons. It has a lot to do with social media, bullying, constant screen time. And the other thing too is God designed us to be in community. God designed us to talk to each other and engage with each other. And those phones make me crazy because I can't, you know this, you see it all the time. You look around at restaurants and families sitting together and everybody's just scrolling on their phone. And it's just makes my heart so sad.
Well, I just feel like we could probably hang out for another
Yeah,
couple
we could.
hours, Doctor. But
We
I want
could.
everyone to know, where is your book? How do we find out more information? You are a plethora of really good stuff for our
Thank
moms
you.
to investigate and understand and kind of peel back for their health. Because, healthy, we say healthy wife, healthy wife, healthy life, right? But really, if we can keep the moms in a
That's
good
right.
spot in their home, they make all those decisions, and
That's
we've got to
right.
be able to think, we've got to be able to take care of our kids. We really need to be in tip-top shape.
We
So
do, and
where can we get your book and all your info?
The book is Hormone Havoc. It's on Amazon, and I break down hormones in a very tangible way. It's now on Audible as well. And then I have a podcast called The Dr. Terry Show, and we have guests, functional medicine guests. We talk about everything from biohacks like you talked about, is this good for you or cold plunge good for you? We talk about vaccines, we talk about the food, we talk about supplements, and we just break down a lot of those things. And we have a lot of conversations with other specialists in the area of spiritual health and mental health, and really break that down quite a bit. So those are the two best ways to engage. And then from my website, you can just Google the Dr. Terry Show. You can also find links to other doctors that I've trained. I've trained probably now I think close to 10,000 clinicians across the country in hormone therapies and what we do. So that we have a pretty big network of doctors that are part of our tribe as well. In fact, we had our largest training to date just a couple of weeks ago, with over 600 clinicians there. So one of the things that we're really seeing happening is more and more doctors are wanting, they're realizing I'm not helping my patients. I need to learn something else. And so it's really a movement right now, and I'm really excited and honored to be a part of it, and honored that you had me on your show because I love what you're doing. You're right. Women are multi-role oriented. We have a lot going on.
We got to be on our game,
We got to
right?
be on our game.
Because if we're not, the whole house is just in a bad shape.
Falls apart.
Closing words of advice, Dr. Terry, to our moms, just about taking care of themselves. Because I think, don't you think it's true? I think we just take care of
That's
everyone,
right.
and then it's kind of like, last call is mom. And mom, like we're just talking about, we've really have to be taking better care of ourselves. And I think just sometimes we don't.
Yep, we don't. And I think that right there is the best advice, because if you don't, if it's like when you listen to when the airline steward is saying, be sure and put your oxygen on first so you can help your neighbor. Same thing with moms. Take care of
That's
yourself so
true.
you can take care of your family. But you know what? The biggest thing I think that I see a lot of times that women and moms, we have a powerful, God gave this to us, a powerful intuition. Don't ignore
Sure do.
it. When you have a gut feeling about something, when you're seeking advice or answers for you or your family, your kids, your husband, it doesn't matter. You have a sense of what's true and follow that because it's 99.999% of the time, your gut intuition is spot on. That is a gift that God gave us and don't ignore it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Terry. And
Absolutely.
again, we'll check out your book and check out your podcast show. Thanks for just sharing all of your insight with us. You'll have to come back again
I
and we'll have to talk. I've got
would.
about 20 other things I want to talk with you about. So
Hey,
we'll leave
and
it on a cliffhanger right
let's
now.
leave it on a cliffhanger. We need to talk about medical freedom. We need to talk about a lot of stuff. So I'm happy to come back anytime. I appreciate you.
All right, thank you and God bless, Terry.
You too.
Well, that was an incredible conversation. Like I said, quite a few times, I could have talked to Dr. Terry for quite a long time. So we must have her back. Please check out all of her information. So informative and so good for us. All righty. Well, moms, I do want to thank you for listening. And again, just remind you to check out everything at momsforamerica.us. We have amazing resources, programs, webinars, seminars, all that to support you on your journey through motherhood. So please go to momsforamerica.us, sign up for all that information, take advantage of what we have. We always say this every week, just for everyone to know, we have everything from parental rights to public policy, things that happen in your kitchen table, all the way to Congress. Moms for America is here for you. We're here to support you. All right. So, moms, I hope to see you next week. And please, again, please like, share, and subscribe to this podcast. Share it with your mama friends. And as always, hope to see you next week. And let's keep changing our country one home at a time. Thanks so much. And God bless. A special thank you to our sponsor, the Herzog Foundation. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of the Herzog Foundation.